Hey everyone, I'm Alix, and this is Made by Chicks, a podcast that shares the real and raw stories of people who are breaking the glass. Today, you'll hear my conversation with Mika Hollander, co-founder and president of Sustain, the creator of all-natural vagina-friendly products, including lubricants, condoms, tampons, you name it, ladies, she's got it. Mika's journey in building Sustain has been a huge inspiration for many, and she's played a massive role in the Better For You revolution. Here's my interview with Mika Hollander.
I've been working on Sustain for over 7 years, but we've been on the market for about six coming up this summer. And Sustain was really started in some ways in like a time and a world that looks nothing like today. And in some ways, things, you know, haven't changed at all. But we started Sustain with sort of this idea to create a brand and a business in women's sexual wellness. And that idea just didn't exist when we started. I mean, the condom category specifically, which was the first category that we entered into, was completely dominated by two big brands, Trojan and Durex. There'd been very little product innovation in that category for, you know, decades.
Yeah. I mean, that would have been what, 2013?
That was, yeah, we started working on it in 2013. And so it's really cool because I think today when you say sexual wellness, like people know what you're talking about, and that was just not the case, which is amazing. So we, you know, started out as initially just going to be this condom company that was going to be, you know, natural and vagina friendly, as we like to say, sustainable, totally unlike anything on the market. And it was going to focus on women because women buy 40% of condoms.
We have sex too. It's weird. I mean, it's like, it's crazy, right?
We're not supposed to, but we do.
Yeah.
Especially if we're not married and trying to have kids.
God forbid we enjoy it.
Yeah. And, you know, things were just really different back then. People laughed and like thought it was funny when I said what I was working on and what I was trying to do. And people were really uncomfortable with this idea of like a young woman, I was 26 at the time, like trying to start a condom company. And, you know, I was super drawn to the space and the idea because of some of the stuff I mentioned, but also just because I live in this world or grew up in a world where business was about creating a positive change in the world, particularly around like a social issue or an environmental issue. And obviously today, I think that's more and more true of businesses, or businesses are trying to be like that, which again is like awesome and such progress has been made. I felt like there was this really backwards, very simple paradigm of like, a woman who carries condoms or buys condoms is a slut, and a guy who does the same is a hero. And so we're sort of celebrating men and shaming women for the same behavior. And so the idea was to just use this condom company to create a celebration around female sexuality versus shaming women for it. You know, since then it's turned into, you know, a sexual wellness and period care brand with tons of products. We were acquired last year in August by a great company called Grove Collaborative, and we're just actually about to launch another campaign, education and activism campaign, in a, you know, on a topic that we haven't gotten that much into yet. And so it's sort of awesome that I get to continue to do what I love to do, but have a little less stress than, or maybe a lot less stress than I had, you know,
yeah,
for the first few years.
I'm super curious about that because I feel like that's something that a lot of, you talk about the entrepreneurial journey and, you know, all that stuff. And then there's also, people don't talk as much about like, okay, and then what, you know, and what happens if you do get acquired and you stay on, or you continue to build, or you leave, like, what does that look like? Which is an interesting thing for me to think about too. It's in the long run. And you started this with your dad, right?
That is another weird, or as most people think, and I understand why, an unexpected thing about Sustain is that I started the company with my dad.
I think that's awesome.
Thank you. Yeah, I dreamed of always starting a condom company with him, and I got really lucky, you know, later on in life or early in my life to get to do that. He's been in the natural products business for over 30 years. He started a company called Seventh Generation. And so getting to start this with him and use him as a resource and have him as a mentor and all of that stuff was, you know, awesome, challenging, and everything sort of in between.
You're probably talking about condoms, but that's not like really it. It becomes a little bit more, you're talking about like finances and distribution and like all sorts of things that aren't necessarily just talking about sex all day, but maybe that wasn't your experience.
Yes, that was my experience. We were not sitting around talking about condom sizing and what lubricant we should make and, you know, that type of stuff all the time. I mean, in the beginning, we were working really closely together, and obviously the team was small, and so we were working hand in hand on everything. And I think family business, you know, I asked a lot of people, you know, who were in family businesses or had started something with someone in their family. And, you know, I was very warned away from doing this. Everyone basically said, like, it's horrible. It will completely ruin your relationship. Like, don't do it.
Same.
Well, congratulations, because it sounds like you're still married or getting married.
We are. No, we're still married, coming up on a year. But yeah, it's going well. We stay in our lanes, you know, like he's good at things I'm not good at, you know, and I'm good at things he's not good at. And that just makes it a dynamic that works really well together. I was like, if we can survive quarantine and newlyweds and running a company together, I think we're okay.
I think the thing for me was Sustain, and it no longer is the case. I mean, I love Sustain and I'm so happy to still be involved, but like building the company to a point where I did and selling it last year, it was my whole life. I mean, and the sad truth is that even just last week, I was like at this offsite, you know, well, quote unquote offsite Zoom retreat with the Grove Collaborative team and asked to sort of, everyone had to share their life story. And of course, you know, I didn't mention that I got married. I didn't mention even that I'm pregnant now. You know, my whole life is about and has been about starting this business and that totally defining me for so many years and still does to a certain extent. So I think for me, that was the bigger challenge. Like the family stuff was hard, but I wonder if that took up a lot of space with my siblings and the rest of my family, but like maybe that would have happened no matter what I was doing, because that just seemed to be what I focused on for so long, pretty much exclusively. And
do you regret that? Husband. Like, do you, I don't know, you say it with like a...
No, I mean, I've, you know, it's been almost a year since we sold the company. So I've reflected on it for the whole, you know, the whole year, and I'm going to continue to reflect on it. You know, I think there probably were times where that was a little extreme and that I should have not just said, you know, prioritize ambition and success and growing the business over well-being and personal relationships at all costs. I think then there were other times where like, I don't know that I had a choice. Like it was sort of like we were in a crisis or we were
every week. Yeah.
Well, that's, yeah, business is just, as my dad says, the wave just keeps sort of like hitting you in the face. And so don't get too excited when you have a minute to breathe, because it's going to be a short minute. I don't regret it. No, I mean, it was a great experience. Like I hope to start a business again someday. And I think my life will probably just look different. And so I won't be able to be, you know, 99.9% focused on work at every hour of the day. But no, I don't really have any regrets. I think I would have, you know, how would I have felt if I hadn't been like that? And then, I mean, everybody's got, you know, reflections and things they think about coming out of their first business.
Yeah, I think it's interesting too, because I think a lot about how my personal life has changed in the course of this. And there's almost like a shedding. And I don't know if it's just, I don't have the experience of not being an entrepreneur I started the business around the same age. You know, that's one thing that I say to people a lot who ask, like, what's one thing you wish you knew about being an entrepreneur? And I don't know if I wish I knew it actually, because then it, I don't know, probably would have scared me. But like the amount of shedding of relationships that are demanding on me, that were like taxing me more than I knew they were, or certain friendships, like you kind of lose a lot of
friends, you know, and I was joking with another entrepreneur I know about, you know, he was thinking about bringing in like a friend of his to work with him. And I was like, you're playing with fire. Like, it's worked out for me, but it also hasn't worked out for me in the past. He's like, no, it's for sure going to work out. And I literally just go, you sound like me 2 years and 10 friends ago, you know? And I think it's just, it's really interesting how your personal life kind of goes by the wayside a little bit. And you start to see who the people are that are, that hang on for that ride. And who the ones, you know, are that just like can't process it or understand it. And I don't know, I also found that there was just such a perspective shift in terms of like what I could and couldn't relate to with friends as we started to, I don't know if you've had that experience at all, but.
It's a really intense, I think I had a lot of friends that I just, for me, it was, you know, definitely people who were overly demanding was a challenge, but also just, I just had so much less time. So any time I could spend with friends or family was, you know, I was being really thoughtful about it and really almost strategic. I mean, I had a couple, you know, a couple of my closest friends where I sort of was like, those are the, you know, when you have free time, those are the people you need to prioritize and make sure you see. I think also just, and you're obviously in a totally different experience, but also just with my husband and partner who was, I was with almost through the whole journey, I had no space to support him. And it was kind of sad upon reflection. And I'm very happy that I can support him emotionally now, but I have so much gratitude for what he put up with and how sort of fearlessly he supported me for so many years. And there were easier patches and harder patches, but it was really amazing to me just how I, you know, how much tunnel vision I had for so long. And it's crazy to come out and just, you know, for the first 6 months, I didn't have any reflections. I was just sort of exhausted and like trying to figure out life in my new home at Grove. But just, you know, the things that come to you where you experience new things in life after and you're like, oh, wow, that this is not how I would have experienced this before.
Like what? I'm like, tell me what there is to look forward to.
Yeah. I mean, I think, well, listen, I think I'm excited about the idea of starting a business again. I think I will do it from a different point in my life and also just with more perspective, obviously, but there will be things that and habits I'm sure I'll go back to. But, you know, even just, I mean, I'm a little over six months pregnant now.
Yeah. Congrats.
And thank you. I don't know how that would have worked before, and maybe it wouldn't have worked, and maybe there truly was not space for starting a family, which is probably why I didn't start one until 6 months ago, or start one. But even, you know, with my family or my partner or my friends, like I just find myself being able to be there for them in a way that I just didn't have the capacity for before. And I'm so grateful that everybody was so understanding, and they truly were. I mean, it wasn't, no one's in a business and running a business where things are going so swimmingly all the time. And so all there is to talk about is how great everything is. Like, that's not how it goes. So people understand, but do people understand if you're doing that for 30 years? I don't know. You know, how does that work?
Yeah. Well, then it just becomes who you are.
Yeah. And my dad was running his previous business for, you know, 30 years almost. And there's a lot that I think I rationalized about myself and how I was coping and how I was so hyper-focused because that's what I grew up seeing. And so that's, to me, that's how it goes. Like, that's what you do. That's the most important thing, you know? So there was a lot of that too, but I do think that, and I see this in talking to sort of people who are on their second business or third business or fifth business, like you learn a lot as you go through starting something. Probably, I imagine the most the first time you do it. And I just think we're only setting ourselves up for more healthy success or, you know, mentally.
For sure. I mean, you're doing it from a position of power at that point, like a position of not necessarily, but I don't know. For me at the beginning, especially, I mean, still now, it just felt like a constant state of like desperation and like anxiety, you know? And I think that there's a lot of the learnings that I've taken from it you know, probably similarly, I would be like, okay, I know not to do that stupid ass thing that I did before that was a waste of time and money, and only figured it out afterwards, you know, which I think gets a little more, I would imagine, I mean, it's never easy, but I imagine that it probably gets a little more rinse and repeat in a more tempered manner. At least I hope so, because that
I think it does. I think also learning to say no is really hard in the beginning. And I think even not just towards the end of, you know, my journey with when Sustain was independent, I was getting better at that. I think COVID is going to force boundaries in a new, you know, even something like travel, which is really exhausting and draining and physically, mentally, like, it's just not good for you to be traveling all the time. And I think in the world before COVID, the idea of, yeah, if you have an opportunity, you have to go take it. You have to get on that plane. I mean, I was traveling sometimes every other week. Like, it was exhausting. But I don't know that that's going to happen in the future. And I think that's a good thing. So I think boundaries that are forced upon us by this crazy year, plus just learning over time that, like, you know, really reflecting on, like, was that worth it? Like, really doing an analysis on sort of the benefits and trade-offs, which is something I started to figure out a year or two ago, but it takes time.
Yeah. I mean, I couldn't agree with you more. I was at a pretty severe health breaking point right when COVID hit. I was just totally run down. Like, same thing. It's like, especially when I was fundraising, like, I'd have a meeting the next, or I would get confirmation for a meeting, you know, the next late morning and get on a red eye to New York, you know, and just like, just do it and just get it done, because otherwise that window would pass or whatever it is. And similarly, like, we distribute, you know, all over the country. So we're launching new states all the time and we have to go there and fly there. And it was just like killing me. It was killing me. And then when COVID hit, it was just the most needed reprieve. Not that COVID's a good thing, but I too totally agree with you. Like, it's, I was running myself totally ragged. And then suddenly it was like, why was I doing that? You know, to that extent anyway, I agree with you.
Yeah, I mean, I've been there. Before about probably almost exactly a year ago, maybe a little earlier, when we were exploring this idea of being acquired and we'd gotten a sort of interest from Grove and a few others. There was a lot of other stuff going on at the time with our current investors and just some other issues. And I was totally at a low point, and from just totally burnt out in a way that, like, I was really running on fumes and I wasn't able to, like, I wasn't sleeping and I wasn't making good decisions. And I sort of, one thing led to another, and I just realized that, like, I wouldn't be able to see this deal through if I didn't take a break. What a crazy time to, like, go somewhere for 5 days. I mean, I went somewhere that was, like, totally remote. There were, like, two other people there, no phone, no email, no coffee, no nothing, like, and did a cleanse, which is, it sounds really nice, but it was really actually not that relaxing. But
yeah,
it was more just about, like, noticing that I actually couldn't help the business at that point and get the business where it needed to go if I didn't take a few days and a step back, and a real step back, right? Like, there's no good time to take a vacation. There's no good time to get off your email. There's no, like, you can just, I ran that list in my head for, you know, 5 years over and over again of, like, there's no good time. It'll be it when this happens, when that happens, when I get that money, when this person, when I hire that person. I mean, you can just go on and on. There's no end point. So my COO, who was totally running the business with me and my real partner at that point, I was very scared to tell him that I was going away at this moment in time. And he was super supportive, thank God, because if he had said, you know, I don't know, I don't know if I would have been able to do it. I think that was one of those moments where, like, it changed my life, and that, like, I came back, I had thought a lot, I had processed selling the company in a way that is some of it at least, which I didn't want to have to process that throughout the deal, because it was a lot to process. Yeah. I'm still processing it. But I also just slept and, like, and thought about, like, what am I doing? What do I want to do? What do I like doing? What, you know, what do I not like doing? Like, is this the right decision? And, like, I need to sort of get myself mentally and physically set up in a very short period of time to sort of sprint for the next probably, you know, 90 days, which is kind of what it ended up being. It was like one of the best decisions I ever made. And I recommend if anyone is ever feeling like at a point where you are running on fumes and adrenaline to stop for a minute or a day or a week, because you're really not able to perform in that energy and mindset, at least not for a long period of time. You can get through it. And we've all probably been there, and like, you've been there, and like, you can run on fumes. It works. Trust me, I did it for a long time, but you can't do it forever.
I totally agree with you. One of my friends calls it the protective crouch. You know, it's like sometimes you just need to go into a protective crouch so you can do the next sprint.
So I've been getting a lot of business and startup related questions on Instagram. So I wanted to put this out to the Made by Chicks community. And well, the hotline is live. Send me a text at 323-218-7660. Just text the word chicks and any questions you have. I'll be answering them on next week's episode and on my Instagram. That's 323-218-7660. Text me anytime. At Bev, we like to think that summer is a state of mind. When you think like summer, you act like summer. Unlock your summer potential by filling up a cooler with Bev. Three super cute varietals of our crisp, dry, and delicious canned wines that make you feel like summer forever. Our Labor Day sale is going on right now, but this is your last chance. Stock up and get up to 25% off for your Labor Day weekend. Bev's here for it.
You know, a lot of people work to rest, you know, and I rest to work. I've started to, you know, after 3 years of this, started to be like, this is part of my job, because also I haven't made space for myself to be creative, you know, like that, the creativity and the sort of like innovation really suffers for me personally, if I'm not doing that. Like the rest I can bang out, you know, like models, whatever, I can do that all day long. There's stamina for that, but creativity just needs room.
Yeah, that's for sure. I think like, I like those two analogies of the protective crouch and the rest to sleep. And listen, it's a certain type of person that gets into starting a business. And I think the first part is admitting you're addicted to working. I'm always going to be a little bit addicted to working. I love working. So I, exactly as you said, like I take time off so I can work harder and be more productive. Like I love working, but you, with any sort of addiction, you need to find a way to manage it.
Yeah, 100%. It's funny that you use that word, because I literally messaged my coworker yesterday because I've had this freaking cold and I was like, I need to kick it. I'll be in and out today because I just need to rest and kick it. And then I was like, I'm going down for a nap. And then 10 minutes later, I'm like responding to emails. And he's like, wow, way to crush your nap. And I literally was just like, I'm addicted to this job. I'm sorry. But do you mind my asking more about selling the business and that process? Because I'm super curious, you know, obviously people are constantly asking you like, what's your exit plan and whatever. And if you have one, and you know, in my industry, there are a lot of family-run businesses. There are, you know, Red Bull's still privately owned, PBR is still privately owned, and they're, you know, they're huge, obviously. And at the same time, that you do see like acquisitions going on, and what is, you know, and what would life look like if I could take a break and have a kid and stuff like that. I'm just so curious as to like how that. Like, first of all, how does it happen? Like, do you just get a phone call one day? Do you seek it out? And then second of all, how do you emotionally process it? And what made you decide that you wanted to do it?
Yeah, so I had a couple sort of unique things happen. And also, I'm just a very realistic person. And I think that's awesome sometimes. And I think it can also just like prevent big ideas and like shooting for the stars in other situations. So for me, I think we had been approached over the years by different companies about considering buying the company. So it was mostly, I think, just the nature of the category that we were in. And there were a lot of big, you know, not privately held players who were curious about what we were doing and they wanted to learn more and sort of they were following us. Once somebody reaches out, right, like it's just going to be on your mind. And so it was any time we were fundraising, again, like that's a natural time where somebody might reach out about an acquisition. And so it came up over the years. In 2018, we actually got our whole Series A and a partial buyout from a different company that owns Vagisil. And so that was still, you know, we were our own company. They were just sort of our, you know, largest investor. But what it did for me was it actually helped me process this idea of losing a little bit of control and kind of working for somebody else, even though, you know, I didn't have like a boss, but like I had a big investor that like I was accountable to. So that actually helped me on the emotional side, because I started dealing with some of that actually prior to selling ultimately to Grove. We grew really quickly over sort of a couple years. I want to say like 2017, 2018, those were like our high growth years. And then in 2019, like the media landscape changed, acquisition costs were rising. It felt like every month there was like another sexual wellness company, another tampon. It was like, wow, this is so great that like things are happening in the space after so long, but also like, oh God, like we're still kind of small. Like this is going to be really tough. So I'm a realist. So I was like constantly trying to figure out like, how do we sort of leapfrog over everybody else without, you know, $50 million in the bank? Because we never got, you know, we never sort of went the venture capital route and like got huge, huge, huge checks. We had a couple rounds, they were friends and family, angels, and then we had this one big investment. But again, it wasn't as big as some of our competitors. So I was like, without, you know, tons of money and willing to just spend as much as we want, how do we sort of stay competitive? And I kept trying to figure out, how do you access customers more cheaply than your competitors, right? Like that's the thing. And we were in wholesale and that was kind of working, but all of our acquisition channels digitally were expensive, and nobody had like a magic rabbit in their hat or whatever it's called, yeah. Right? Like we hired different marketing people, different marketing agents. It's like everybody was playing the same game. And so in June of last year, we reconnected with the CEO of Grove, who I had known loosely for like 5 years, because we started around the same time. I was a little after him, but he had just built this thriving business of, you know, selling his own brands, natural products that come like, you know, household products and personal care that he had launched, and selling third-party brands like a marketplace. And he had like, you know, over 2 million customers. And we were about to go out to raise, you know, more money. And I connected with him and he said, well, what if I just like offer to buy the business? That answered my biggest conundrum, which was, how do you get to millions of customers for free? You become part of someone who's already paid to acquire those customers. And these are all natural product customers and they're mostly women. And like, wow, this really solves the thing that's been keeping me up at night for the past, you know, 6 to 12 months. So was it the right time? I mean, I think now I will say.
Yeah. I'm like, sounds great.
To not be running a business, I feel like, wow, COVID would have definitely thrown me off some sort of cliff probably like 10 different times. You know, it was the right time. I had the perspective of like working with a big investor who was a more traditional sort of like CPG company, and like they didn't really get sustained, and we were kind of like apples and oranges, and we were direct to consumer and they weren't. And that was challenging. And Grove was sort of like, oh wow, like they're young and they're direct to consumer and there's so much synergy. Like I can just sort of see how this is going to work really easily. And so we made the decision to pursue the deal, and I spent, you know, a lot of last summer out in San Francisco. And for me, it was like as good as I could have expected it to be. I mean, you're always worried going into this stuff, right? Like, am I going to get pushed out? Do they understand the brand? Do they care about the mission? Are they going to keep the quality of the products? Like all of that stuff has been, you know, sort of exceeded my expectations. So I feel very lucky. But it goes back to sort of like being realistic too. Like I could have said at that point in time, like, no, I'm going to put my head down. I'm going to get more money and I'm going to keep trying to figure this out, because an exit in 2 years is going to look like this versus what it would look like today. And of course you do that in your head and you talk to people, but I didn't see the path to acquiring the million customers without this type of partner.
That totally makes sense. I mean, it's interesting because I work in a super male dominated world as well. You know, booze, there's a lot of layers of dudes in it. You know, any of the people most likely that would have potentially acquire us kind of fall into that category. And so I worry a lot about, you know, if that were to happen, what would they do to the brand? You know what I mean? I mean, it's like, it's still early to think about that. But for me, that's part of the reason that my mind has just been on build the thing that will eventually acquire the other things and build a new and different type of beverage company rather than get wrapped up into the same culture that we're trying to go against. So it's cool that you found somebody that, you know, gets what you're doing in your space, especially since when you started, that wasn't really the case.
There wasn't, Grove wasn't an option as an acquirer, you know, 6 years ago. And I think what we're going to see over the next few years, and I think we're already starting to see it, is that the landscape of acquirers is changing, which is really exciting because I don't think this idea of selling out is going to be the only option for entrepreneurs. And I think that's, you know, really took a long time, but I think that's where we're headed.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. I mean, I think even in our situation, there's just so many sort of brand first businesses that would be probably over time interested that wouldn't necessarily have traditional beverage backgrounds or whatever it is, which I don't know. It's a cool concept. You were a B Corp, right?
Yeah, Sustain was always a B Corp. Grove is a B Corp.
What does that mean exactly?
A benefit corporation is all about triple bottom line. So people, profit, planet. And it's a concept that's been around, God, I want to say probably 15 or 20 years. And there's a lot of really big companies that are B Corps. I mean, Patagonia is a B Corp and Warby Parker is a B Corp and Ben and Jerry's and Seventh Generation and, you know, all of the great sort of mission-driven brands, because it's a very rigorous process to get certified. And then you have to continually recertify every few years. So it's an awesome sort of external way of ensuring that your business is not only prioritizing profit, which is traditionally for corporations, you know, maximizing shareholder value. If you're a public company, like, you're only getting measured on your share price, right? Like, which is derived from mostly just the numbers. And so having this concept of like using business to work, make the world a better place in a certification that then is really hard to accomplish and continue to keep is really cool. I love buying things and exploring brands. And if I see the B Corp logo on something, it's just like a really good validation that they're doing some good stuff.
Yeah, that's awesome. We should look into that though. I don't know that alcohol is something that the B Corp people would be excited about.
Sure, they're pretty
open-minded. Involved.
Yeah.
Yeah, good to know.
Yeah.
So congrats again on the baby. What do you like want to teach him about sex?
So my whole thing about sex and sex education, and sex education is like the thing that I'm the most excited and sort of lit up about right now for a lot of different reasons. And I think after all of these years of trying to tackle things like vaginal health and orgasm equality and not slut shaming women and, you know, basic like sex positive content around like the female anatomy, what I go back to is that like comprehensive sex education is like kind of the thing that like I think will positively impact everything from sexual health to consent to orgasm equality and pleasure. What comprehensive sex education sort of means a lot of things. And to me, one of the most important things is just an open conversation about sex and sexual health. And so it's not about for me like, oh, what's the one thing I'm going to like teach my son about sex? It's just creating an environment and an ongoing conversation about sex and sexual health so that he feels comfortable asking questions, and he feels like there's no, you know, like one answer, right answer. It's not like I'm just going to like put a box of condoms outside his door with like a good luck, like be safe. Like that's not going to work or do anything positive for him or whoever he's having sex with. So I'm excited to like try and create just this ongoing dialogue so that he feels comfortable asking questions.
What's kind of like looking forward? Like, what are you really looking forward to in the business? I mean, obviously you're talking a lot about sex education. Are you thinking like programs that you're going to build out? Are you?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. We are really excited, and I'm personally very excited about a big sex education campaign that we're going to be rolling out very soon, which is about creating awareness around an issue, which is the horrific state of sex education in this country. And really then from there, sort of starting a conversation about where are people learning about sex, like porn or parents, teachers, school, friends, magazines, like, you know, where is that education happening and how can we actually advocate for more comprehensive sex education? And Sustain has already done, I think, a good job at just educating our community as much as we can around this topic, but we're going to sort of formalize how we're doing that throughout the rest of the year. So I'm very excited. That's awesome. About that.
Thanks for listening to my conversation with Mika Hollander, co-founder of Sustain. If you liked what you heard, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts and follow us on Instagram at Made by Chicks and at DrinkBev. Don't forget to check out our Labor Day sale over at drinkbev.com and send me all your questions for next week's podcast. Just text CHICKS to 323-218-7660. Anyways, bye. See y'all next week.